सहनाभवतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यंकरवावहै तेजस्विनावतीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः।
We do 56.
Stitadir muni ruchyate.
Dukeshu anudvigna manaha sukeshu vigatasprahaha vita raga vayakrodaha stitadihi munihi ruchyate. In the previous verse, it was Bhagavan is talking about the stitta prajnaha, and then in this verse, he's talking about the stitta dihi. Both terms were used by Arjuna, right? Arjuna in his question. The stitta prajnaha is the one whose knowledge is firm, steady, unwavering. The stitta dihi is one whose buddhi is steady, isn't his knowledge, his buddhi. The buddhi, not the knowledge, just the buddhi is steady, you know, abiding with itself. Stitadihi. So he says at the end, stitadihi munihi uchate. The muni, the wise person, is called a stitadihi, right? That's the basic. That muni is called a stitadihi. Who? Dukeshu anudvignamanaha. Sukeshu vigata spraha. Dukeshu, in sorrows. So sorrows he's using in the plural, dukeshu. Talking, really referring, according to Shankara, why is dukkha in the plural? Dukkha is dukkha. But the sources of dukkha can be viewed as threefold: adhyatmika, adibhautika, and adidaivika. So adhyatmika are those sources of sorrow that originate with me, like something wrong with my body, or I have a headache, or my mind is disturbed or hurt. So those sorrows that are originating from my own upadi, from this jiva, from this body, mind, sense organs, that's adhyatmika. That adhyatma means it's centered on myself, this body, mind, sense organs. Adi means it's focused on, centered on. Then adibhautika means the sufferings are caused by those around me. Mm-hmm. People around me, the situation that is surrounding me, those things that are close to me. It could even be something like, you know, a mosquito bite or a snake bite. Or it can be the harsh words from somebody. So anything that's happening in my immediate environment is considered adibhautika. The third one is adidaivika. Those are things, the hardships that I have no control over, like earthquakes or volcanoes erupting, or something that's happening in the world condition, climate change. Some people, as the waters rise, they're losing their whole country. It's being the country is going underwater. Hundreds of thousands of people are having to move. That that such type of situation, you know, even though it is kind of man-made. Nevertheless, accepting, it's a huge, huge situation that's moving, you know, literally hundreds of thousands of people, or if an earthquake takes, nobody wants an earthquake, nobody's asking for an earthquake, but so many people are disrupted by it. Volcanoes will cover whole cities, you know, but it's not our fault. And for right now, I'm taking back the climate change because we have so much human responsibility for that. But something like a volcano or an earthquake or a thunderstorm, all of these things that just come upon us without anything that we can do about it, that's called Adidaivika. It comes from the heavens, it comes from Bhagavan, it comes from the atmosphere, the situation, much bigger than us. You can also say it comes from, it comes from the fates, you know, it's come from the fates. There's nothing for us to do except to absorb it and respond to it. So he says, for this stitadihi, the one whose mind is steady, whose buddhi is steady, in these dukkhas, anudvigna manaha, the mind does not become shaken. The mind does not become affected. So I'm able to maintain, I maintain my shanti. What Swamiji says, the word that I've talked about this before, that I'm starting to more and more love the word, I maintain my objectivity. Maintaining my objectivity, that means that I can be present to the situation without the jiva srishti, you know, totally taking over. I don't know how much of you, all of you remember these two terms. I'm just going to go over it quickly because they're important terms. Jiva Srishti and Ishwar Srishti. Okay? The word Srishti means creation. So Ishwar Srishti means this empirical creation, the shared creation that you and I experience. The shared creation, it's Bhagavan's creation. And Bhagavan's creation also includes your body, the instruments of knowing, your mind, your sense organ, the subtle body, the sukshma sharira, all of the parts of the subtle body. So that's all Ishvara. You can't wish it away. Oh, I don't think I'll have a subtle body anymore. Or let my mind, I want a different kind of mind. Let's replace this mind with another mind, like car parts or something. It's not going to happen. But this is Ishvara's creation, and with this body, I'm born with this body, and this body will take me through to the end. It's not something that I can wish away or replace with another body, just my imagination. Whereas Jiva Srishti, my imagination is very much a part of Jiva Srishti. My reactions, my raga dvesha, my emotions, the way I respond to my experiences, that's under my control. I can actually change those things. Like for instance, I'm somebody who's continually very reactive to my raga dveshas. First of all, if I want to, the neutralization of those raga dveshas is under my control. With knowledge, I can actually neutralize them. I can also, because Jiva Srishti, the Jiva's creation, these are things under my control that I can actually change. I can change the way I respond to raga dvesha. These are huge things. And another thing, in terms of gaining self-knowledge, you know, when I gain self-knowledge, my prarabdha karma does not change. My body does not change other than becoming relaxed because of the tensions that I have caused by Jiva Srishti. As they release, that has an effect on the body. As the sukshma sharira, the mind relaxes, that sukshma subtle body is here indwelling this physical body. And so when it relaxes, when the sukshma sharira relaxes, when the mind relaxes, you find your body relaxing, you find your heart relaxing, all of these type of things. So when I gain self-knowledge, my body doesn't change, my prarabdha karma doesn't change, you know, the body doesn't drop dead, as some people fear, because once I know myself and know I'm not the body, then the question is, well, what happens to the body then? Once I recognize I'm not the body, what happens to the body? Does it drop dead? You know? That's an actual question that we have to deal with. It doesn't drop dead. It's something that belongs to Ishwara. It's the power of the karma. But my mind goes through very major transformation based upon this knowledge, because my knowledge base is very different than it was before. A lot of ajnanam, a lot of ignorance has been removed. And so when you gain self-knowledge, it's not like the world changes on you, or that your prarabdha karma changes, or that you get a different body. But the way you respond to your experience is quite different. And so that's what's being dealt with now, how really Krishna is answering this question. How does a jivan mukta, somebody who is liberated while living, jivan mukta, astitta dehi, somebody who really has nishtha in this knowledge, when you say, how do they walk, how do they talk? That's all more or less, you know, Ishwara Srishti. They're walking and they're talking. The accent they had before is the accent that they'll have now, unless there's something really weird. Like, what if I have some notion, you know? Some notion that now that I have knowledge, I must walk slowly, speak slowly, take on a different sort of accent, whatever, you know? But that's all jiva srishti. That's all notion, that's all ajnanam, actually. You know, as though my knowledge has something to do with that. Nothing to do with that. But it does have a lot to do with my composure, with my mind, with how I respond to the world, how I respond to myself, how I respond to my own emotions, how I respond to the little ones inside, how I take care of myself. All of that is so very different. Whether I'm secure or insecure, all of a sudden the insecure person is not there anymore, really, because the Atma is secure. It's the only secure thing there is, you know? So I let the insecure things have their own swarupa, their own swabhava, their own nature, let them be insecure, because they are insecure. Insecure in the sense that they're continually changing. What if they were to ask something that by nature is continually changing, what if they were to ask Bhagavan, please don't let me change anymore? Reminds me of what our Swamiji said. You know, be careful what you ask for. You might get it. What if you ask, don't let my body change anymore? You know, okay. Yeah, so not going to happen. What if you were going to say, my mind, let my mind be stitta dehi. And you think by that, let my mind just stay steady. And you mean by that, no thoughts. Yeah? We have to know what we're asking, right? No thoughts? What does that mean? It means I'm not going to have a mind anymore, right? It's like the mind will become like a snapshot. Maybe if you take a snapshot, then that's frozen. That's it. But a mind is very, very fluid, you know? It's continually changing on so many levels all of the time. But stitta dehi is not talking about losing the instrument. We're not talking about losing the instrument that Bhagavan gave me. We're talking about what is our disposition, our emotional disposition toward these instruments. How am I with my mind? What is my attitude toward my mind? I have free choice over these attitudes, but the attitudes can be based in ajnanam, in self-ignorance. What about when the attitudes or my vision of myself and my vision of the world is based in jnana, in self-knowledge? Then there is quite a big difference in the mind that I used to have and the mind that I have now. It's a very, very significant difference. What is the difference between a mind that has totally superimpose the myself upon itself? That's the condition of ajnani. The mind has superimposed the self upon itself. And then when that's the case, the mind, which by nature is continually changing and existing in this body, is now taking on, I am then taking on, or the mind is imposing on me, finitude. I'm as finite and as long-lasting as this body is. I will go through all of the decay and death that this body will go through, you know. And my mind will, I am completely subject to the whims of my mind and the emotions of my mind and the moods of my mind. And so I have really, really very little freedom. Because I don't know if you remember, and once you start gaining clarity, you forget how it used to be. I just have some very poignant memories of walking along when I was a teenager, walking along and everything was fine, and all of a sudden I was totally bummed out. I don't know what other word to use. I was just bummed out. It was like I was just so feeling so down and so angry and so unhappy. And I realized at that time, this happens to me any time, and I don't even know when it's coming. I don't know when that's going to come. And it's so miserable, I can be fine, and boom, there it is. And I was thinking, wow, this is really bad. I remember thinking through this whole thing. This is not a good thing at all. Because it's not like you're walking around saying, let's just be really miserable for a while. We're not saying that. It comes over us. And then you also have the opposite experience. Your mind is happy. It has some shanti. You know, and it's so wonderful. And this is how I want to be. This is how I always want to be. You know, I just want this stitadihi. Really. I want the stability. And you know, even as you're enjoying it, that it's finite and that it's going to go. That's samsara. That's the samsara of an ajnani's mind, of one who doesn't have self-ignorance. The mind of the jnani is very, very different than that. It's not different in the sense that your mind continues to change and to register your experiences and to throw up this emotion or that emotion. In that way, it's a living being. The mind is a living being given to us by Bhagawan, you know, subtle, living entity given to us by Bhagawan, always changing, always dealing with the situations at hand. But what is different, very, very different, is that the mind of a jnani is no longer looking for its ananda in the world. It's not looking or needing to have the experience of ananda in the form of a vritti. In the form of a vritti. And the reason for that is that the nature of the self, just like the nature of the relationship between a pot and a clay, for your mind, your being, which is changeless, is always really totally pervasive to the mind. It's even ridiculous to say, like I'm not going to say, though I am going to say it. I'm going to say, you know, the clay pervades the pot. That's a silly thing to say, but we do say it. It's a silly thing to say because really there's nothing there. There's nothing there but the clay. But we experience the pot, and when we say, well, there's nothing really there with the clay, there's only clay, sometimes we say it, the clay just totally pervades the pot. From the standpoint of the pot, that's true. Accepting the pot as being there, we can say the clay pervades the pot. So accepting my buddhi and my vimanas, my mind, as actually being here, you know, as something, as some sort of a container, which it isn't. But accepting that experientially, it is. From that experience, my being, the Atma, the self, which is absolutely free of change. There is no birth and death for me, nor is there any change between any birth and death. There's no birth, there's no death, and there's no change in between. And so there is nothing more stable and more steady than my being. And the nature of my being is ananda, satchit ananda. Ananda, instead of defining as bliss, I think it's more, if we have to find words, right? We have to find words to point to our own nature. Because there is, in a sense, nothing like me. Why I say that, even if I use the word ananda or bliss, we use that word in reference to vrittis. I'm so happy. I've never experienced this kind of depth or this type of bliss. I feel so much love and compassion for this person, and then I'm very happy to find myself feeling that way, you know. But these are as I've said, they are like different forms of ananda. They're the ananda my nature reflected in the vritti. And so they're, because the vritti has different modifications, the reflection changes as though there's some difference between sympathy and compassion and love and joy and care. We have so many of these words that really hold and resonate with me. And we have meditative experiences, but those are all vrittis. Some vrittis are very, very subtle. We call them atisukshma vrittis, the most subtle. But these experiences of ananda are many and varied in terms of quality. They all totally, deeply resonate with me, and I don't ever want to push them away. Kindness is another one. This is kind of the emotional spectrum of thought modifications that deeply resonate with my being. But the thing is, those thought modifications, because they belong to the mind, subtle as they are, they change, continually change. That's the nature of the mind. It's not going to not change. So, however, the mind is pervaded by me. And so your mind is always, at all times, pervaded by that ananda, the beloved, I'll call, that which is the beloved, that which is the most dear, that which nothing compares with it. Because it is that experience of being completely loved, you know. And that's a subtle experience. It's not like it's not like the July 4th fireworks or something. It's subtle and profound. It's that which is completely whole, completely loved. It's interesting that one of the sad ailments of our time, according to this psychologist I quote sometimes, Heinz Kohut, is that feeling of not being loved. Not being loved, not being wanted, not having self-worth and self-esteem. This little basket, you know, is our basket. The basket of our era. And what's so sad about it, in a way, is that my being is actually the opposite of that, you know. And so this lack is something that's formed just because we haven't been filled up by our family, by our parents or our immediate family. We haven't been, as one psychologist friend of mine said, you know, who was just having a child, you just have to hold them and fill them up, you know. You just fill them up with love, you know, until they just can't take anymore. You fill them up completely, you know. And then that structure, that the structure of your psyche is well formed. It's well formed to, as though, reflect or naturally, you know, have a disposition which reflects the ananda of yourself. So you never feel I'm not loved or I'm not wanted or, you know, I'm not worth anything or I don't have any self-esteem. All of these type of feelings that you may don't tell to everybody, but you probably tell to your therapist. I just don't feel like anybody really wants to be with me or anybody really cares about me. And all of these things, you know. Just because I didn't get filled up, you know. My structure, my psyche, you have to just pour it in. Really, honestly, you know. Say that to your little one inside. You're going to pour it in. You're going to pour it in. Such a beautiful thing, but, you know, we just have to understand that so that we don't pass that on to our children just out of not really understanding, you know. A busy, busy world. But so here, for a wise person, the person who has gained self-knowledge, you know, your buddhi, your manas, whatever is going on, whatever thoughts and things are going on, it is filled with myself. That, you cannot stop that. You know, you are filled up with yourself. And so, with that which is loved by nature, that which is whole and complete by nature, you are completely pervaded by that. But the mind is hurt from growing up in this way and that way. And so it has a lot of stresses and strains, a lot of unconscious tension and all of these things that cause the full expression of that of yourself in your mind. So even though yourself, the me, is self-evident and doesn't need the mind, you don't need the mind for your self-experience. You don't need the universe for it. So this full, beautiful, most dear self is always you. It is always here. It is never covered. But the problem is the hurts and pains in the mind, the insecurities in the mind compete with that, you know? And so they overpower because that's what I'm paying attention to. The mind is paying attention to them, trying to take care of it, trying to take care of it. They don't even notice me. Those vrittis, they don't notice me, even though I am completely there. But for a jnani, for a mumukshu, for one who comes to need to know who am I, really, that is what changes. Now the mind, because of that, the teaching is all about that, really, that atma anatma viveka, that discrimination between me and all of these things and states that are coming and going, especially all of these vrittis and emotions coming and going. This knowledge is a discriminates between that so that my buddhi totally recognizes itself differentiated from me, and I am always there shining. And so my buddhi falls in love with me, with the atma, you know, not with raga dveshas, not with fulfilling this desire and that desire so that I can have a little opening, you know, and have a little flash of ananda. But then I have this flash of ananda and I want to hang on to it and it slips away. It slips away because the ananda was never on the object. It was projected on the object. But the experience of the ananda, that is real. You know, it's me. But then it closes over. It opens up. It closes over. I would say the experience is, it's not as though as it's me, but it's me plus a reflection of me. How's that? Because the mind gains a sukhavritti, a shantavritti when you fulfill any type of raga, gets a shantavritti. I am present to that shantavritti. The shantavritti is like a mirror. It's there. Shantavritti means that thought modification. It's there. And I am there. Me, my own self experience is there, and the shantavritti is there. I means all of us, can differentiate me from the shantavritti that I'm illuminating, right? Because the self is not the shantavritti, but the shantavritti is not creating any obstruction whatsoever to my own nature. But my nature, as I am, is completely present to that shantavritti, and I'm very aware of both. I'm aware of this mithya experience, and I'm aware of my own self-evident. Aware of means I'm not aware of it, I am it. But the me that I am is self-evident, self-shining, so it's its own experience. It's not like, oh, look, I'm very aware of myself right now, as though there's some self I'm objectifying. You never have to objectify yourself. You are yourself. You're always yourself. But it's always muddled up from the standpoint of the mind with all of these emotions and all of this kind of stuff. Not for a jnani. Not for one who's that stittadihi. Not for one whose knowledge is free of doubt. For that one, I am always the same. They say, focus on yourself, be yourself. That one that you're being, you can't not be. You try to, okay, be yourself, change. Change. No. Go to sleep. No. Nothing. Just you are. You just simply are. And who you are is so beautiful. You are the beloved. That is your nature. That's why everything is always coming toward that. It's called, especially if it's not projected, it's coming toward that which it is. If it's projected, everything's going toward that which is out there projected. But you know what? A projection is never out there. It's never really out there. Because you say, that, I love that, it makes me so happy. The happiness you're feeling is here. You know? But I've projected the source as though the source is out there, even though I never experienced. Say, it was really out there. My happiness is out there, look. You know? Look at my happiness out there. No, you experience the person out there or the situation out there, but the happiness is your own being. But it's your own being seen through the lens of the mind. Whereas for a jnani, I'm actually not being with myself through the lens of the mind. This is kind of important. I am myself. You are yourself. You don't need a mind to come and look at you to be. You're the luminary that lights up the mind. You are yourself. And once the buddhi has differentiated itself, its mithya self, from self-luminous me, then I am myself, and I am always the same, and my buddhi is in love with me. Not this body, mind, sense organs. With me, the self, which is Ishwara. I could say my mind is in love with the self of Ishwara, which is myself. Or I can just say my mind is in love with me, my mind is in love with Ishwara. Because if I say it to you, you probably felt yourself just cringe for a minute. My mind is in love with myself. Narcissist. That's what happens to me. Even when I say it, I go, That's what you say. My mind is in love with the self of Ishwara, which is my very self. That works. Right? Mind is in love with Bhagawan, the self of Bhagawan, which is my very self. And this whole creation is a manifestation of Ishwara, of my being, of myself, of the self of Ishwara, which is my being. It's from my being that this whole infinite creation comes. So now, enjoying being with myself, it says now, dukeshu anudvignamanaha. The mind of that stittadihi is never really affected by all of these dukkhas, because my mind has viveka. The dukkhas are dukkhas. The sufferings and the sorrows are exactly what they are. They're sorrowful. It's not that they're not sorrowful or hurtful. That is exactly what they are. And I'm aware of them, and I'm very objective toward them. I have to do what is to be done. I have to take care of myself. I have to take care of my family. I have to take care of this whole situation. Do whatever I can to help and to mitigate the suffering, whatever it is, whether it's just a physical or mental or emotional, or it's something in my surrounding, or something that Bhagawan has inflicted on us in some way or another. You know, it's not that that suffering or hurt isn't there, but my mind is objective because I am not suffering. The Atma, yourself, is not suffering. Nor is your mind suffering. Your mind enjoying the wholeness of yourself can be experiencing hurt and pain and suffering. But all of that hurt, pain, and suffering is taking place in me. That is inviolate. And so both things are happening. So knowing very clearly that the world is in constant flux, and the entire world, including my body, mind, sense organs, is subject to birth and death and change in between, you know, and that the whole thing is eating itself as the whole creation is kind of gobbling itself up, as Arjuna says when he's totally freaking out seeing this whole Vishwa Swarupa, Bhagawan's whole form. He saw it as it's eating itself. Everything is being churned, you know. It's being churned like in these big rollers. It's just being eaten and eaten and eaten. Every single thing, he saw that, you know. But, oh no, I don't, Bhagawan, come back. That's how he felt. Come back. But actually, that's what we would see too. Right? And if you're a jiva within that, you just see yourself like that you're going to be rolled, you know? You're going to be rolled. But what if you are you? You are you. And this whole Ishwara Swarupa, you know, is an infinite expression of your being. Nothing is happening to you. This is Maya. This is the expression, this is the natural expression of your being, you know? But it's what we call Maya. Mithya is an incidental attribute. It doesn't bring about any change to your being. It's So all of this that we experience in this, in our small little realm of our prarabdha karma, all that we experience is the incidental attribute, means none of it brings about any change to myself at all. And that becomes your experience because it's the truth, it is the me, it is who you are, and nothing ever happens to you. And so being with myself, allowing Ishvara to be Ishvara, I am with these situations objectively. It's not that the dukkha isn't there, but I am with it in an objective way. So that's what he says, dukkeshu anudvignamanaha. The mind doesn't go through, the mind doesn't become affected in the same way. I don't take it to be me that is being hurt because I experience this, the inviolate nature of myself in the midst of all of that. That's not something that an ajnani can experience. You don't experience the inviolate nature, the ananda, the beloved nature of your being in the midst of whatever experience you're having. Then he says, sukeshu vigatasprihaha. Also in experiences, the various experiences of happiness, vigatasprihaha, I enjoy that, I can enjoy all of those experiences, I experience happy experiences, happy experience, but I don't have that spriha, that attachment. That attachment is gone. Because there's nothing in me that is going to say, okay, I'm having this beautiful, happy experience. You must stay. Don't move. Don't go. That's totally unrealistic. I'm no longer asking the creation to be something which it just simply can't be. Be stable. Don't change. It's like, this is perfect. This is perfect. Please, Bhagavan, don't let it change. Remember what Swamiji says, you be careful what you ask for. Be careful. What if it didn't change? Say, okay, there we are, frozen in time. Everything changes, everything comes and goes. And so I enjoy the happy experiences and I let them freely let them go because I'm not asking Bhagavan to change his nature, not asking the creation to change its nature, and I'm also not needing it to stay. I don't need sukha because I am the very source of that sukha. Right? So why do I need it to stay? It's just it's a nice thing that's happening in the creation. I can enjoy it, but I don't need it. So there's nothing to make me grab onto it. So for such a person, he says, for that person who has that equipoise or that wholeness in both sukha and dukkha, that person is vita raga bhayakrodaha. Such a person is, vita means free, is free from raga dvesha. Means they raga dvesha, the likes and dislikes can be there, but they're in their what do you call those kamas? Raga dvesha means kama, right? They're non-binding. So I can have they're just preferences. They're not a raga where I need this to be happy. You know, I need to get rid of this to be happy. That's not there anymore. I don't need anything to be happy. I'm already happy. I'm already full and complete. I'm not dependent on the world to make me full and complete. And so that removes raga dvesha. When you think of raga dvesha as a binding desire, you no longer have binding desires. Binding desires is I need this in order to be happy. That's a binding desire. I don't have those anymore. You're going to have preferences. You have desires that come along with your prarabdha karma, or somebody else brings you into that, drags you into that particular, their desire. You go for it and do it if you want to. But if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. It's okay, I'll do something else. It doesn't matter. Bhagavan doesn't want that. It's fine. It's not doing it or not doing it is going to add to my own well-being. My own well-being is here. It's always been there. Always will be there. It's not subject to coming and going. So that one who is freed really from dukkha and sukha, you're also freed from raga dvesha, right? And you're also freed from bhaya, from fear, because there's a lot of fear when I need something to be happy. Or I need to be free of something to be happy. Because you are that happiness, right? So it's like, I need this so that I can be happy, so that I can not lose myself, so that I can get myself back, is what we're really saying. I really need this. And there is no guarantee at all that I'm going to get it. You know? What's that little thing people say? There's quite a distance between the cup and the lip. You ever heard that? So, there's quite a distance between the cup and the lip. Anything can happen. Right? Anything can happen. You know? And so we know that. And we also know, you know, this yoga kshema. First of all, to get what I want is an issue. There's no guarantee that I can get what I want, but I need it to be happy. And so then there's going to be fear, of course, because it's not guaranteed. Of course there will be fear. And then I need to be able to keep it. That's another problem. Because as soon as you finally get what you want, your mind, because you're an intelligent person, really, sees all the things that could go wrong. All the ways you could lose that. You know? You see what you want, and all of the obstacles become very clear to you because you have a mind. Your mind knows, I want this, but this could go wrong, and this could go wrong. This person could stop me from getting it. They also want exactly the same thing. All of that is there. That's all bhaya. It's worry. It's fear that I'm not going to get it. And then there's fear when I have it. So many things could take it away from me. So many things. Even something could happen with me that takes it away from me. Or something could happen to the thing itself. Or somebody could come and take it away. There's just no zero security. So that bhaya is there. You know? But for Jnani, there's no bhaya because the ananda that is the very what you're seeking with your raga dvesha, you're seeking that ananda, that wholeness, I discover its source. And its source can never be taken away by anybody, not even me, which is a big thing. Especially for us, you know, Westerners, we always think, you know, I could improve myself a little bit more. I could make myself just a little bit better. I could do better. Okay? Let alone, you know, I could, like a bouncing ball, degenerate, you know, or kind of lose my shanti or lose my well-being, kind of dum-dum-dum, you know. But I don't think that one's kind of as much of a catch as I can make it better, I can make it better, I can better, I can do better, I can improve things, I can make this nicer, I can make this nicer. The Atma you can't make nicer. You can't make it nicer, you can't make it worse. You can't do anything. You are that. Nobody can come and do anything to it either. Nobody can take it away. You can't take it away. Nobody can change it. You can't change it. You are it. That is it. That's it. You're not an object within the creation for anything, including yourself, your body, mind, sense organs, to attack it and spoil it. Nothing can be done. And so with that, there is no cause for bhaya. I have absolute security in reference to my own well-being, to my own self. There's no birth and death for me. There's no change for me. Nothing can happen to me. My mind can't even cover me. It has never covered me, but now it can never cover it. That ajnanam is there that made me think so. Now that's not possible. It doesn't matter what the vritti is. I am the one shining in that vritti. And that is just the reality of it. And so there's an absence there, gone, is the raga, the bhaya, and then krodha, anger. The anger is also gone, because why do I have anger? Because somebody's screwed up my raga dvesha. Somebody's intervened somehow, is behaving in a way that stops me from getting what I want. I can even say if my partner or my loved one or my child, I can get so angry, you know, and my partner, why? Because you're not acting like the one I married. You're not acting like you're supposed to act in order for me to be happy. I married you. because I was so in love with you. You know, I was so in love with you because when I'm with you, I feel happy. You know, when I'm with you, I feel so happy. You know, that's why I wanted you for myself. I wanted us to be together, you know, so that I can enjoy that peace and shanti because you're so beautiful. What happened? You're not acting like that now. Okay. That makes me so angry. Yeah. It's such a funny thing. Mary Agnani. Yeah. Then you're safe. You're safe. You're honest to God, you're safe, you know. Mary Agnani. You know why? Because the Jnani knows who you are, and the Jnani knows who they are, you know? And even if you have a cloud going through, a momentary delusion, you know, a momentary dark cloud is passing through in this delusion, you know, your partner knows it's okay, it's just a dark cloud, I know who you are. We give each other, as Jnanis, we give each other so much space because we know the truth of the whole thing, you know? I can allow your mind to be and to be this way and that way. It doesn't make any difference. I know who you are. And I don't need you to be anyway at all because who you are is who I am. Right? The Ananda that I depend on is my own being. That is what gives me the freedom to let you be as you are. I'm not depending upon you as my partner, you know, to give me all of the happiness to fill me up in every conceivable way. There's one, I had one Jungian analyst when I was really studying Jung, and I went into Jungian analysis, and he was really, really wonderful. Yeah. He wrote an article and gave a lecture on this modern day era of what we do to our partners. We ask our partner to fulfill every conceivable role. You know, you have to be this for me, and you have to be this for me, and you have to be this for me, and you have to be this for me. And the partner may also feel, I have to fill every conceivable role for you. I'm not going to share you with anybody. So every role that is available, I am that person. So it goes both ways, you know. Actually, you know, you have to, you know, spread yourself a little bit thinner. So you have different relationships with different people. Maybe that one very sacred, committed relationship between two people, you know, the very, very intimate, committed relationship between two people is what you share together and you build a life together. But you can't expect your partner to fulfill all of your different interests. That's going too far. Because what if your partner has no interest in that particular segment at all? And you say, no, you have to be interested in that. You have to come with me. You have to do that. You know? And the partner says, okay. You're totally wearing me out. But... Yeah. If we have our own Ananda, we can give some. Swamiji used to say, I would make the very best husband. I would make the very best father. He said, I'd make the very best husband. I'd make the very best father. Because I can accept you totally as you are. You know, I can accept you and help you totally as you are because I don't need you to be in a particular way. He would say this in this joking form, but it's true also. I can allow you to be as you are because I don't depend on you for my ananda. It's a very, so much freedom. Even for your child, I can totally appreciate you for my little child, for how you are, and I can help you and guide you to grow and to make the right decisions and understand these kind of things that you have to learn. But I love you as you are. And you don't have to perform for me, you know, so that I can say, what a beautiful little child you are. Look at how you can play the piano. What a beautiful little child you are. Look at how you're able to dance in front of all of my friends. You know, that's a very sad thing. You know, for normal people, That's not normal, by the way. That's abnormal. Most of us don't do that. Most of us love our little one for exactly what they are. You're just in love with that little child. And that little child is just being itself, and that's what you love. And then it learns to do this and learns to do that. So sweet, honey, you did such a beautiful job on that. But they don't have this feeling that I have to do a beautiful job so you'll love me. Yeah. So what if your partner doesn't feel, I have to be like this, I have to perform like this, I have to be good like this, like this, like this, like this, so that you'll love me. Otherwise, you know, that's what we can give. That's what we give because of the stability of my own being. Not that there aren't problems, but there's less problems because I'm not projecting everything onto you. That's a beautiful thing. So that krodha, no real reason for it, because the raga, dvesha, or mitya, so any irritation is the irritation that you would have over preference. It's not, has no sting to it. So the stittadihi, that wise person who has this freedom, is called a stittadihi. Means their buddhi is steady. You know? Buddhi is steady. It's not being dragged all around the place. So, and that's it. Om Mamadha Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.